On this episode of Damsels in the DMs.
As time went on, I realized that if we have the opportunity to tell them as women directors through our lens, I think it's really important to give that type of, to tell those type of stories, because we're not hearing those stories. We're not seeing that action. We're not seeing ourselves in the light that we should be seeing ourselves in.
This message is intended as a reminder that we are not licensed professionals, not psychiatrists or psychologists. If you have a serious problem, please seek professional help. The National Suicide Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255.
There's some damsels in the DM.
Yes, queen.
Tell us what's the vibe. There's some damsels in the DM.
Who?
Please tell us what's the vibe. DMs, DMs, yeah, we see them. Yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs, we don't need them. We just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Damsels in the DMs. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Alejandro, and it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, isn't it?
It really is. It's 80 degrees right now in New York, which is, like, a little concerning, but, you know, I'm enjoying it, so.
I mean, if I were you, I'd be grateful for that, given the fact that you were, like, I mean, basically on the verge of going into Noah's Ark. Well, how long
That's
ago was
true.
That?
It's true.
Yeah.
I know you're always getting different weather reports from me, I feel like, on this podcast.
Which is fun. I mean, it keeps things spicy. That's how life is, twists and turns. But the weather over here in LA is not bad. It's pretty.
Actually, and the weather in Los Angeles, speaking of, is probably indicative of the conversations with the studios that SAG-AFTRA is currently having. It seems that they're making some headway with their negotiations, to give an entertainment industry update. Getting some positive emails from them. I know that we're supposed to be making sure that the proper information goes out about what's happening in there. So I don't want to spread any negativity, but I'm hearing good things about negotiations, and stay tuned for possible deal.
Yes. Positive news and positive energy all the way, all day.
Yes.
Yeah. So how are your projects coming along?
My projects are coming along great. Really no complaints there. It's been cool getting my production company off the way and starting to fully produce some projects that I'm really excited about. So with the strike, you know, there's only so much development stuff that we can do right now, but still very exciting to be working with some awesome writers on their projects. How is your publishing company coming?
Really well. I'm so pumped. I'm working on a cover update for my book on dreams. I'm working on a reprint for Jess's book with a potentially different printer. And I'm super pumped for my first theatrical piece that will be shown between February and March of 2024. I've been working really hard on getting the costumes together, getting, like, you know, rehearsal schedules set up, and I'm so, so thrilled to, like, you know, just see everything moving forward. So,
how is your first directing endeavor going?
Directing endeavor? No, I have Pedro, who was the daddy in Daddy Date. He's going to be the director. And I don't want to act in this piece. I really want to, like, just stand back and just, like, submit as the writer and produce and just kind of, like, see how it takes off from there. So I'm thrilled that, like, you know, it's a new form of expression. I have not written theater before, so to kind of fill that space with words and energy that way.
One question, Alejandro, do you think that you would ever try directing now that you're wearing all of these different hats as a playwright, publishing company head, and writer?
Absolutely, and I have you to thank for being such a role model in being able to, like, be so multifaceted in those capacities. Because, I mean, you know, thinking about Defining Dodo, how you were able to produce, direct, and act, it was just like, whoa, how the hell? And I feel like we've had conversations in the past with, among ourselves and with guests, where, you know, to have, like, a natural foray into directing from acting and from writing, I'm just, and that has been, like, a secret goal of mine, but I just, it's always been a mystery as far as how to do it. But what's great about, you know, taking risks and just, like, jumping into unfamiliar territory is that we can master these skills and goals somehow. And the more I am continuing to collaborate, the more I'm seeing it possible to come to fruition. So I'm super pumped, and I would love for that to happen one day. Hell yeah.
I'm happy to hear it. And speaking of amazing role models, we have Maria Secor on the podcast today. And wow. I mean, this is somebody who also started out as an actor, as a dancer and poet, and then started shifting into building her directing career. So, I mean, she is the expert of wearing multiple hats, and she's also the expert of getting your film into film festivals, where she's had films in Cannes and in Venice as both a director and a producer. So I think that she is the exact person that you all need to hear from in building your careers.
Oh my God, she is such an icon, my goodness. And the poetry of life with which she views everything, as well as how she expresses herself. I'm just, oh my goodness, it was like candy to my ears. Just a treat, a true gift, a treasure of an experience that we've had to be able to take away some amazing tips on, as you said already, how to get our work recognized by festivals, but also, you know, just rolling with the punches and evolving and constantly being open to change and really trusting ourselves with the gifts that we have and yes. being able to share that electricity with others and to be able to collaborate and really see successful projects come to fruition.
As soon as she brought up the poetry moment, I was like, oh, Alejandro's all over this.
I'm excited. No, this was an amazing experience. I cannot wait to dive in. Shall we?
Let's do it. All right. Well, hello, Maria. I'm so happy to have you here. For those listening, Maria and I actually met at a Film Fatales event because I've been leading their New York events team, and Maria is a member. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Lauren. Thank you, Alejandro. I'm so happy to be here with you guys.
So happy to meet you. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Me too.
So tell us everything about how you got your start, how you got interested in the entertainment industry, and what brings you here today.
Oh, wow. We're talking about a whole span of things. Funny enough, when I was younger, I belonged to a dance company in Newark, New Jersey called Gallman's Newark Dance Theater. And I was part of the junior company. And during that time, I started doing some print work and I enjoyed performing so much. And then I decided to go to drama school. And then from there, it just opened up a whole new world of acting and filmmaking. And eventually I started writing. And so I'm a published poet as well. And when I say filmmaker, I write and direct mainly and mostly directing. So when I do get to write material, it's really exciting because then I get to really put my hands in it and really create something that I can give a voice to.
That's beautiful. I'm curious, when you're with early publishing work in poetry, how do you feel like your poetic voice comes out as a filmmaker?
Well, you know, that's a really great question, because when you think about poetry, and that's really my major is in English. One of my majors is in English with a concentration in creative writing and poetry. And I think that when you're really telling stories, oftentimes we have to do it through dialogue, but some of the most powerful scenes that you'll ever see are the ones that have so little dialogue and yes. that have the action, and you're doing the sensorial work. You know, when I think of some films, I think of the one with Mark Anthony and Stanley Tucci, you know, was it Big Night? And when they're in the kitchen and are having this fight and they're just about to kill each other on the beach, the two brothers. And the next thing you know, all three of them, including Mark Anthony, are in the kitchen and they're just cooking. And they're just, you know, it's just kind of significant of how life goes on. But I think a lot of really, really good professors in filmmaking, what they do is they teach you about poetry. They teach you about prose. They teach you about literature. And they talk about the showing and the doing, opposed to explaining every single line or every single detail. And that's what we do in poetry. We create images. So I learned about free form and writing. And during that time, I realized, wow, you know, you can actually show things in a different way. You can express yourself in a different way. You can get your point across poetically without just having to give so many details, but creating images. And I think by doing that, and also I've done some photography in the past, I realized filmmaking was really my thing. And so I stuck to that by learning lenses. I taught myself lenses.
Oh, so, we love a good self-teaching individual. Yes. I mean, I think that's so important, is to take it upon ourselves to yeah, to teach us what we want to thrive in, if we, even if we don't have familiarity in what that is in the beginning. But I'm also curious, though, how does the poetry of your writing, or you know, applying what you were just describing as far as showing and not telling, how does that affect your directorial style?
Well, the showing and telling, one thing I always tell filmmakers, and of course we're all students of it all, no matter what type of laurels you have, no matter where you are in your career, and being a film fatale is great because we have to be distributed, we have to have films that have been on the market, or at least a theatrical minimum, right? But I think what it is about poetry is before I start writing, I start thinking about the world. Just like when I'm making a film, or when I'm writing for a film, or if I'm trying to create a certain world, there's a certain world that I'm putting together very poetically. And it really just starts with filling yourself with accurate knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, and once you understand facts and something that you're trying to discuss or something that you're trying to create, and you know the accurate knowledge, then you have something to say. You know, I always felt like I've always been somewhat of an outsider. So I make films about outsiders. You know, and I empower the working class by telling their story. I mean, that's what we do. We tell stories through lenses. We create images on pieces of paper, and then, you know, you hold it in your hand, and then hopefully by the time you're done reading the poem, you're enlightened. Or by the time you're done seeing one of my films, whether it's a documentary, it's a narrative piece, or even if it's something branded, you walk away with something different. And so I like telling stories as such. And documentary filmmaking has opened up a new world of branding for me that I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity 20 years ago, because now we're telling real life stories. We're using real people, you know, with real looks and real ideals and real situations. And so I think if we really focus on that, the poetic aspect just kind of pours out of me in that sense. I hope it always does. And I think that's how, you know, you could take that kind of discipline and put it into the filmmaking work, you know, and it just kind of creates that world for me. But poetry has a huge foundation, and so does dance. There's no doubt about it. Music. I don't see how, as artists, we can do one great thing as an artist and not have all of that somehow or another come together or be all involved in some way.
I want to circle back. Why do you feel like an outsider?
Well, you know, I've always been in industries that somewhat have maybe a cookie cutter image. You know, I remember being on my set one time and someone thought I was a PA. You know, because I think we get so stuck on semantics of words and looks. And, you know, the minute that we open up a book as a kid and we say, this is what a firefighter looks like, this is what a doctor looks like, this is what a fairy tale is, you know, it gives us little room to really just kind of explore outside of the boundaries. And I think, you know, sometimes it's not people that are short-sighted, but we're just so limited sometimes. So I'll give you an example. As a professional dancer, I was 5'5", you know, I was smaller. Ballerinas usually are a little bit taller. Sometimes they want them at least 5'7". You know, I've done print work before when I was younger, you know, and that was a great source of income for me. It was a great period in my life, but I wasn't your average print model, you know, actress, as an actor, you know, because I'm multi-ethnic, it's like, where do I fit? You know, it's when you get to a certain point in your career where you're really, really working and, you know, now you're just an actor, but still I, as a working actor, I still fall under the categories of other or different, or, you know, there's nobody that's really going to say, I'm looking for this type of person when you don't have, you know, something very specific, like blonde hair, blue-eyed, you know, African-American, you know, 5'5". When I think about roles, I think about people. And when I can play an ordinary woman, it's such a gift, you know, because then I can really have an opportunity to kind of like stretch that world out and create that truth and really live in it truthfully and honestly, and to just kind of, you know, be able to work properly, opposed to just being, you know, typecast for certain things. You know?
Yeah, and so that younger people watching can also see themselves in a role that's just ordinary woman, right? One question I wanted to ask you is, like, you've had this, like, very diverse background between poetry and dance and acting. Why do you think directing is the thing that you've landed on?
I love telling stories. And I think as time went on, I realized that if we have the opportunity to tell them as women directors through our lens, I think it's really important to give that type of to tell those type of stories, because we're not hearing those stories. We're not seeing that action. We're not seeing ourselves in the light that we should be seeing ourselves in. Powerful, conflicted with a resolution. You know, we're not always damsels in distress. But, you know, but I think also, you know, when you can tell a great story, you know, and you break it down, it's no longer just this woman telling a story, or it's an ethnic woman telling a story. It's now a mainstream story. I've been very, very conscious of that with the work that I do, especially now that I'm behind the lens and I can call my own shots. I'm very careful about saying, well, what is mainstream? You know, what are our coming of age films? Why does something have to fit in just one category? Why can't it be a film for the world? And I like to make films for the world. And that's just really what I'm doing. That's what I've been focusing on. But I think when we start to tell these stories, you know, it's important as directors that we really pick the things that are close to us, things that we're true to. I think it's important that we have a message. I think it's important that we develop our cinematic style. I've been doing that for years now. For documentaries, I'm known for doing ensemble roles, which are very, very complicated. You know, usually you follow one person, you know, a thing, one conflict, you know, but when you're telling an overall story, that's an important job for me, because I have to make sure I do it correctly. Research has to be impeccable. So why not tell stories that are ensemble roles? Why not find the most interesting person that maybe is not in the headlines, like you guys are doing, like you know, that, which is a great service to all of us. So thank you, because you know that we are the working actors, the working filmmakers, the people in the industry that are working, that at any given point, if we are prepared and in the right place, right, it could just soar for any of us. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, a great platform. Like, this is exactly what I'm doing. And a lot of people don't realize that the indie film world, it's filled with so many possibilities now because of technology. You know, you can literally make your own content. Like, look at this, is what we're doing here today. Again, you know, this is excellent content. We don't always have to go to a movie theater anymore, even though I have so much respect and love for theatrical films. But we can go on our Instagram. We can see something. We can connect to something. We can learn. There's YouTube. There is Instagram, you know, social media. And now with filmmakers, for those of us who are making our own films, if we have the right plan for it, again, it's a global world of possibilities. So it's important that we really stick to that and we stay true to telling our own stories the way we feel that we can tell them truthfully, you know.
Absolutely. And honestly. And I love what you said about, you know, we're in a day and age where there's a lot of opportunity due to technology. But I really want to go back to what you said about being a misfit, because I also grew up kind of a loner, kind of a misfit, often head in the clouds. And, you know, I mean, I guess to some degree, a weirdo. But
same.
As I'm older, right? I mean, I feel like all of us in this creative world that we're in, like, we have something special about us that no one else really has. But I think that that's kind of the treasure that we can, you know, not necessarily monetize, maybe, but that there's like a wealth of opportunity that we can build upon, because we're able to touch audiences, many different audiences, in several different ways, and possibly even ways that we never even imagined. Mm-hmm. And I admire so much how willing you are to take risks and to just like expand, how open you are to expansion. But I'm also really curious, you know, what sort of challenges have you encountered during this kind of like whirlwind of a path that you've been on so far?
Well, you know, I think, and thank you for sharing that about yourself, because, and you too, Lauren, because a lot of us don't realize that really we weren't crazy. We weren't unstable. We really weren't. We weren't weird. We were just eccentric.
Yes.
And you know what the problem with the other people were? They didn't know where to put us. They didn't know how to appreciate us and value us and see outside the box. And so therefore, you know, the kind of obstacles, first of all, just being a woman, it was always very different for me. And by the time I reached my 20s, I was literally in the 90s. The 90s was a good year for women and for many people. You know, the industry was different. We were working, you know, we were thriving. And now you fast forward all the way to here, you know, here now, you know, we're in the middle of a strike. But the reality is, I think that having a mother who is an immigrant, mm-hmm. and, you know, coming here to this country, she really didn't have a lot of time to be the baking cookies mother with an apron in the kitchen. So aside of that, it was very, very difficult to be expressive. What she would call over dramatic was me being aggressive. You know, I had a great dad. He passed away. But, you know, I have to tell you that when you can't perform or you can't do something that can creatively, where you can express yourself, it is the worst torture in the world. Yes. It is the absolute worst. And as a child, and I don't know how many young people have ever felt this, but we would do the daily going to school, right? We would have first in the US, we have maybe pre-K, kindergarten, then we have first through eighth, then we have, you know, our freshman year to our senior year. And during that time in the curriculum, you have certain classes that you must take, like your English classes, your math classes, et cetera. But then when it came to the arts, that's where I would thrive.
Yeah.
And if we didn't, I didn't have enough of it. And it wasn't until really high school where my father was like, she really wants to dance, you know? So I went to a local dance school where I'm wearing like these crazy costumes, you know, we're doing these combinations and we're doing these stage performances like once a year where they have a recital. And it's like so costly to buy the costume, to do this combination. And it was just sort of like, oh, well, you know, well, Maria, you have to learn how to, you know, do these type of dances and recitals. But then it was just sort of like this thing where I just really wasn't happy. So when I wasn't doing what I wanted to do as a child and had, and if my parents weren't cultivating that, mainly my mother with that support, it was pure misery for me. And then in high school, they said, well, wait a minute, you know, she has talent. We can, no, we have to give her a solo. You know, once I got out of the dance school phase, and then it just, it opened up for me. It gave me something to really focus on. You know, it was about practice and practice and practice and also becoming an artist. And I never knew that was happening until I really studied at HB Studios with Uta Hagen. And prior to having one of her classes, I was working with who they used to call Madame Sergava. At the time, she was in her late 80s, you know, and I remember coming into a class, you know, and I was doing a scene and they do like scene studies. So there's no dialogue. And I took the flower. I had a flower. I just happened to pick a flower on the way to class, but I had it with me. I was like, oh, I'm going to explore this exercise. And through the whole class, I was fumbling and I was looking for a vase and I didn't have the prop ready. So that was my mistake. But eventually I found it. And then I opened up the faucet. I put the water in the vase, and it was so funny because she said to me, she's like, you know, you have, if you continue down this way, you have what it takes to be an artist because you cared about the flower. You didn't want to kill the flower. So sensorially, right, we put all these things into not just as artists, because both, you know, I know you're an actress, Lauren, but it's also what we apply to our lives. Like, you know, how do we take care of living things? How are we sensitive to the people around us? When we take from someone and we're doing a character study, are we gracious about it? You know, and if the character is really intense, or maybe they do a lot of things to hurt people, do we really understand without judgment why they do that? or understand, you know, what that process is, what their sad process is, and how do we grow from it, right? And I think by learning those things, it made me stronger as an artist. So, you know, you take the poetry, you take the dance, so I could become a flower. I could take care of the flower. I could, you know, I could write about the flower. I could film the flower. So all of these things for me have just set a really, really good foundation. And I try to work on it as much as I can. Like, I try to read as much poetry as I can. I'm very much into photography. I'm constantly looking at photography, learning from other photographers, learning from filmmakers, learning from actresses, learning from you guys, watching what you do, because it's all part of our education, right? To kind of just make sure that we're moving forward in the right direction and we're good artists, we're positive artists that really work, but also that have something in here that's good, like an inherently good nature that we're creating around ourselves. So
yeah,
but that's how I was an outsider. I was always different. And so I know that feeling, you know, I know that when you're not being heard, but it takes a really good trained eye for someone to realize like, oh, you know, we need to help this person. Oh, we need to really put our time into this person. You know, I was watching something the other day on Catherine Hedwig, and she was talking about, she's really well-known director, right? And she said that sometimes she just takes her camera and she'll go in from room to room and she'll shoot things. Or she said, just get your friends, get your family involved, like get people involved, like get, you know, I think sometimes in this world, we're so worried about who's getting paid and
yeah,
recognition and who's doing this. And like, you know, we're kind of like not really like getting the people we love involved and not seeing things the right way. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to ask, we need to get people involved. Like, I'm so grateful that you asked me to do this. I'm like, I'm in.
Well, you know what I love, like just listening to you talk about it, is because like, I think that this conversation kind of like emphasizes what I love about the podcast, which is like, you know, I knew you from events. We had met like somewhat, but it's like you're having a conversation over a cocktail, right? Like you don't really get to know a person. But then listening to you talk right now, you know, you mentioned my acting background. I'm not sure if I had mentioned to you that I'm in graduate school getting my MFA in producing.
Yes.
And the one thing that I will tell you that I have learned throughout my couple years of getting my MFA is I can spot a director. Like directors are just different than producers because they have an eye, they have a vision, and every detail in their world, like all goes into putting their visuals together and making a project. Mm-hmm. And when I hear you talking about this flower, like to me, it's like, of course you looked at the flower. Of course you were thinking about the flower because you're a director and that's what directors do. They think about all of the details on there. And like, I think as a producer, like my director brain or my producer brain is so inspired when I see directors like that who are so attentive to the world and so observant on it, because I think that that's really what the mark of a good director is, just being open to the world. So I'm curious for you now, with these many things that you're doing that we talked about, what's like the prioritization of them all at this point? Like what's the hierarchy? How are you focusing on everything? What does the balance of your day-to-day look like with all of the hats that you're wearing?
Well, the priority always comes with the work. So what am I working on? Like what is available to me? And my last audition was maybe about 2 months ago, right before the interim waivers ended. And it was a really, really interesting film. And it was like really something I wanted to do. And we were talking about doing it. And now it looks like they might have to take it outside of the US because of the circumstances that are happening with the strikes, right? So in terms of acting, that would have been my priority right now. But the thing is, there's really no work for me. So what do I have to do, right? And I have to pivot to something that, again, that won't take me back to my childhood where, you know, I'm not creating, or I'm not painting, or I'm not photographing something, or I'm not taking a class. So therefore, right now I have 3 documentaries. And wow. And so we talk about the projects first, right? And then how do you really organize them? So the first one I'm doing is called Freestyle Music, The Legacy, which is the Spartan of a project. And it's about the Latino artists from the 80s and 90s that were from New York City. And the African-American artists and Afro-Latino artists that were also part of New York and Miami at the time, who made freestyle music. And it was sort of, they were laying the foundation for pop music, which a lot of people don't know. But this is such an important project for me because it's a high level cinematic documentary that I'm writing and filming. And because it's music, it has such a beautiful look to it. And the artists look beautiful. And they really tell their story and their legacy about what was going on at the time in the 80s and 90s and how they got their music on the radio and the Billboard charts, dance charts, Hot 100, all of, I mean, it's really been an honor to film them. And then I also have two other documentaries. One is called Tilly. It's about the late Tilly Bing Bryant, who was a civil rights activist. And back then she was so light-skinned and fair-skinned that she could pass for Caucasian, but she was also, you know, in jail. And she wrote this very important letter to her mother on a piece of toilet paper that's going in the African-American Smithsonian Museum. And I knew Miss Tilly, and it was just such an honor to get to know her and her legacy and her courage and, you know, how she fought for civil rights. And the last project is called Sybil, which is about, Shirley Mason, who is known as Sybil, who had 16 personalities. She suffered from DID, then known as multiple personality disorder, but she painted in five. And we want to use this documentary to show how people who suffer from DID can find art and can find healing through hypnosis and through having a really great therapist. You know, so as I'm working on that, and the last thing is my comic Spear, we're right now shopping that as a television series. And that comic was in 2015. I don't think we launched at Comic-Con, which was really great. And then over the years, it was very, very hard for me to keep up with it because of, you know, just having the right team. But then all of a sudden, you know, here we are, you know, just recently, like 2018, 2017, all you see are these amazing Marvel shows. Right, there's all these Marvel shows coming out on television. You're like, so all of a sudden they said, wait, you have a comic, Maria? So my literary agent said to me, he's like, I think that this would be great. I was like, shout out to Robert Walker and Tanisha. But they were like, no, we should shop this, you know, as a TV series. And so that's what they're doing right now. And I got to tell you, the discipline of creating, you know, a TV series is really exciting, like getting into the world. And it's so different from making a film, but very similar. There are similarities, but those are the things that keep me really busy and a really great project I'm working on. I guess I could talk about it now, is working with Robert Clavillis, mega, mega talent from CNC Music Factory. His partner, David Cole, passed away, but now we're working on the CNC Music Factory story and mainly Robert's story. And I got to tell you, working with him, if you think I'm busy, he says that he's, you know, somewhat retired, but I'm like, yeah, you're not retired. You're still making anthems. Your music is thriving. I mean, from 30 years ago plus. So I love working on these projects. And you know how you work on these projects is with technology, and just understand that every day, right, the discipline that I have, because if I don't have this discipline, then I don't work and I don't get paid and my projects don't get finished, right? But you have to put aside at least minimum of an hour a day or more on everything you are working on. You know, it's kind of like you know, whatever you work on in a day, you have to dedicate yourself to that. Like as a producer, right? You're probably learning how much box offices make on romantic comedies. What do box offices make on horror movies? What is a indie? You know, we talk about the indie world. What are indie films making now? Oh, how do they get sold at the film festivals? You know, like those are the things I look to my producer to know, because even though I only produce when I have to, but for me, I'm more of the, you know, prep all the way to finishing, like to the post-production type of producer. But when it comes to the business of that, you know, you have to do something every day. So it's the same thing with me. You know, I have to work on Sybil every day, or I have to shoot something for Tilly, or I have to go and I have to talk to the artist for freestyle. You know, I have to work on my voice. I have to, for my acting. And when this opens up, hopefully we'll open up soon and start working again. I'm writing. I'm always writing. You know, I'm creating the world. I'm looking and seeing like, well, what is it? What's happening here with these characters? You know, what am I trying to say? What is the world of this television series, films, etc.? It's all just, this is all I do for a living. So I better be really disciplined. Otherwise, I'm going to party a lot. No, I'm kidding. Otherwise, if I don't do it, I'm going to party a lot. No. You know, it keeps me busy and I'm grateful. I think I'm finally at a place where I feel like, wow, like this is the career I wanted. I wanted to do many things and I wanted to do these things very well. And I'm where, you know, I just see the progress every year. So that's Absolutely. How I divide everything up.
Wait, so when is the music, the hip hop documentary coming out?
Yeah,
when are all those projects coming out? Oh my goodness.
Yes. So freestyle music is more, it's actually electro kind of, it's like electro, it's dance, it's club music. And it actually started at Shakedown Studios, you know, when I think one of the first songs, like you look at Niobe, you know, Afro-Cuban sister and like amazing, amazing voice. And you take a little bit of Lisa, you take a little bit of Shannon and that, those three artists. And then you have Stevie B and Trinier that are coming from Miami. And then you have Sapphire on the front of Spin magazine that says, you know, Latin hip hop, like an explosion. They didn't know what it was. But what we're trying to do is get a couple of more artists on. And once we get them on, then I'm going to create the sizzle so people can see the style of the film. They can see who's involved. You know, we have,
oh my gosh,
it's there and they're amazing and they're so beautiful and big hearted and their legacy over 30 plus years, you know, it's here with the producers, DJs. We do have Little Louis Vega on, Robert Clavillis. I met him doing the documentary, George Lamont. I mean, it goes down the line. It's just artist after artist after brilliant artist and some who opened up for Madonna. I mean, it's just great. It's a great New York story. Miami story, and it's going to do so much for the American music genre. Ooh.
And at this point, are you specializing more in documentary or narrative?
So narrative, I've started building my narrative, actually. You know, a lot of times they want, unless you're a director who's given a project, you know, like let's say, you know, Lauren, you find something and you say, you know what, Maria, I think you'd be great for this. And you give it to me and I work through it and I somewhat pitch it back to you. You know, what happens is that you have to build a lot of narrative shorts sometimes. Like you have to do different types of shorts to really build your narrative reel, if you want to call it that. But for me, because I do such cinematic documentaries, it has opened up the branding world for me, at least the past like 5-6 years. And then it has also opened up the narrative world for me, where again, you know, for me, indie films are just so very special. So now, with having the right business plan from prep all the way to post-production and then for acquisitions, now it's a different story. So I am working on two other feature films that are narratives. And, you know, again, like it's just about having the right plan. So being in Cannes this year has, again, I met so many wonderful people. It's really great to just meet the distributors yourself and they want to see your ideas. And when they really get to know you and they understand that you can pull a film through, you know, that you're not going to buckle or you really have something very well thought out. That's so important for directors to show. You know, I love it when people have an idea and they say to me like, oh, I have this script that I want to do. I'm like, well, tell me about it. Show me. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything written? And you'll be surprised. So many people don't have anything written. And until you start writing it, only then will you know if it makes sense. If you start putting together somewhat of a director's pitch, you know, seeing what does this world look like? What are the colors? Who's involved? What do your actors look like? So many people don't come prepared with that. And, you know, it makes me wonder, like, you know, you can't do this as a hobby. Right. I don't think anybody could do, you can't be an actor and do it as a hobby. There's just so much involved. And even with filmmaking, I mean, you can shoot things, but if you're a filmmaker, every single little detail has to be tied up, right? And you're still going to have loose ends. Yeah. So I think back to what we were saying, I just think, you know, as a filmmaker, it's very important for me that I really come prepared. So that way when, you know, when that narrative opportunity does come along, other than saying, Maria, this is a great script, we want to buy it. I want to hear, Maria, this is a great script, we want to make this with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, I'm aiming for that.
Where it's like the importance of not just having a bunch of ideas, but like the execution and making sure that you have your ducks lined up correctly or as efficiently as possible in order to, you know, land at the end point at which you see yourself going, because only then you'll be able to surprise yourself as far as how many other doors are going to be open. But I mean, with such admirable feats like getting into Cannes and getting into Venice, how? My brain is already like, oh my goodness, what tips do you have for our listeners to help get content into festivals? Or what is your, I don't know if there was like a top five sort of takeaway that would help filmmakers to, you know, get in that doorway, what would that be?
No. Okay. So I think the first thing is whatever the project may be, whether it's AR, VR, it's a documentary, short or feature, whether it's narrative, short or feature, make the project. The first thing is to make the project and be truthful to the project. I think that's very important. And the second thing is, I would say, is really get to understand the festival you are entering. Mm. Understand what they are looking for. Not every single festival is really looking for your type of film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just know that a certain film that goes into Tribeca may not be the same film that you would take to Hot Dogs. Or, you know, something that you would have for Doc New York City may not be for Tribeca, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because every single film festival has something very special about them. And it's not just also the big ones. You know, I have to say the big ones are the ones we aim for because of the fact that that's where we can get our distribution. That's where we get our marketing. But every single film festival has something to offer the world or the community. So it's very important that, you know, you show up. So once you know that what your film festival is about, then you enter that. Just don't put your film everywhere. I believe a lot of people just, you know, waste a lot of money in exhibition costs.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's really important. The third thing I would say is to make sure that you have a marketing plan.
Mm.
So social media doesn't cost very much, but your time does. And when you are marketing a film, it's like a campaign, right? And every day you have to make sure that somebody is looking at your trailer, somebody new, you're bringing new people to your work. And so if you're going to enter in a film festival, really be committed to showing up at that film festival and really be committed to marketing it. The fourth thing is, I would say, make sure that you have enough money in your line for exhibition costs to make sure you can travel, to make sure you can pay for your Ubers, your per diems. You know, give that to the artist. Give it from all the way up to the executive producer, all the way to the person who's maybe that character that really makes a difference. Get everybody involved. Because making a film, no one can make a film by themselves. I don't care what the Imri says. You know, you can try.
It's impossible. There's no way.
It is a collaborative effort. Get people involved, you know. And I think the fifth thing is, really understand where your film fits in the world. Like, what platform are you going to put your film on, or what are you aiming for? Like, for instance, I would love to do art films all day with classical music and Vogue dancers and, you know, ballerinas and so on and so forth. But will it sell? You know, I can show off and stylize it, right? It looks really great. But that would be a music video. And so, you know where your film fits. Make a film that will get distribution and recognized. So I think if you stick to those five things, you will have a successful run with the festival. You'll have an idea of, with your marketing, who you're going to reach. Your exhibit will be able to bring in the right distributors, the right people in acquisitions or sales agents, or maybe even an investor for finishing costs. You know, you might want to say, like, you know, I really wanted to do that dance scene in Central Park, but we couldn't afford it. You know, maybe they extend the film, or you just have someone, if you're really fortunate, just outright buy your film. You know, but I think that's what's important with film festivals. But first, it starts with being truthful to the work, make the film.
I have a logistics question. First of all, that was amazing. That was so helpful. Oh. And I hope all of our listeners just took notes on that, because that was incredible. And my logistics question is, I've heard mixed opinions on making an Instagram account for your film. Do you think that you need like a separate page per film, or do you think that you can advertise your film on your personal page?
Wow. So I think the best place to really ask that question is an organization called Smart House. And Smart House, really, if they have any seminars, you know, for people out there who really want a more direct answer with real statistics, I think you should go and check them out. But my opinion is this: I think sometimes my personal life is for me. So I'm kind of like pro boundaries. You know, I'm sort of like, you know, my personal life, like when you go to my Instagram page, you're going to see things that I'm kind of doing, I'm promoting. Sometimes I don't exactly speak about my films on my page. I think producing my own films, it's the least of my favorite thing because I have to tell people what I'm doing. I have to show people what I'm doing. I have to get people involved. So when I say that my personal life is for me and I'm very, you know, big on boundaries, I don't necessarily put all of my personal life on my personal page. But that being said, I think it's important that a project, whether it's your documentary film, your feature film, your comic, it should have a separate page because it has a life of its own. It has, you know, you're breathing into some, you're creating something. It's like a new platform. It's something, or it's a TV show, or maybe it's poetry. Like my poetry shouldn't cross over into my acting and vice versa. So I have this struggle with mariasecor.com. I'm like, well, how do I put that up? Oh, I know how to do it. So if you're interested as you know, in my performances or me as an actor, stage, film, and TV, you go here. If you're interested in my filmmaking, you go here. If you're interested in a comic, it's here. And I keep everything separate. So personally, I think that it's good to have separate pages, but still get people involved in who you are. You know, I don't, that word brand is kind of like this thing where I don't like to, I'd rather be considered a multi-hyphenate than a brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
Because,
no, that's right.
Because, because I, you know, a brand means that, you know, there's like so much money involved. I'm just being who I am. And I do several things, you know, maybe some people are like, well, I think she's better at this than that. And that's all left up to speculation. But yes, for sure. I think that everything should be separate in a way. Like, for instance, if I came to you, Lauren, you wanted to hire me and you would say, well, Maria, like, you know, what do you do? And you want to hire me as a director. I'm going to say I'm a director, I'm a filmmaker, but I also act. But right now I'm focusing on directing, right? Alejandro, I come in and you make a, you do a play or you want to see it. You're like, I'm an actress, but I'm also a filmmaker, but right now I'm focusing on my acting. And, you know, we have to really show that because sometimes I see people come in and they say, yes, you know, I'm an actor, I'm a filmmaker. I juggle and then I do this and I, you know, let's like, that's what I'm about focus, you know, focus on what you're there for and be present for that. So yes, I think separate.
Again, yeah.
What'd you say?
I said that discipline is coming up again. Yes.
I think they should all have separate pages. I would, but also just talk about what yourself, you know, put a highlight on your page, you know, let people know who you are in your bio, you know, and let people decide for themselves.
Yeah. I love that. And for you now, when you talk about like you're separating roles and that you hone in on whatever skill it is necessary for that particular job, when someone's presenting to you a project now to take on, what are you looking to see in the project to take it on?
So there are many things. I mean, if it's some type of form of branded work, it's pretty much set out before me. You know, what do you need me for? Do you need me as a writer and director? Do you need me to just come in and direct? I won't do things that I just don't believe in. You know, I have a very strong sense of morality. So there's certain things that maybe I wouldn't get involved in that other people would, and that's fine. I'm just at a point in my life where I can say, no, I don't want to do this. It could hurt someone or maybe... If I always look at, first of all, will this be a good thing to do? Is this something positive? Because when you're young, I think even for me, like work was work. I would be like, oh, this is work. Work is work. Work is work, right? And then I was thinking to myself as I got older, I was like, well, I need to become more responsible with the work that I pick. Because, you know, so first I would look at, is this something that's for me? You know, is it something that's positive? The second thing I would do is depending on the crew or the people that are involved, like I really, really work with my crew. Like I have a very set crew I work with. I kind of want to know how much they trust me and how much they believe in me to take it through. I'm at a point in my life where I'm not that hireable in a sense where if I'm going to take something on, it's because I really want to do it. Whereas acting, I'm usually open to, because right now, I mean, it's really hard for actors. But, you know, there's something that I can create and really get into. I can just literally go to set and slip into fiction, right? And it's like, I'm there and I'm done. And I don't have to worry about the production. I don't have to worry about anything else. Or if it's a stage play, you know, I go, I warm up. I live those moments on stage, and they're beautiful. And then I exit, right? But for me, it's very important that I work with great people. I love working with really just wonderful people that are like-minded, that want to follow through with the project to make sure that we can get it from, you know, start from beginning to end, and have a good, also just a good business plan for it. Oftentimes, I've seen a lot of filmmakers make great films or have great concepts, and they just somehow or another get benched, seated, put on a shelf, and you know, no one will ever be able to do anything about that, and that's pretty sad. So I'm very selective with the people that I work with now.
Smart. That
thank you.
That's wise. I think that's wise, because it's like, you know, you can't. And I love that you spoke about trust, because I think it takes a lot of trust to open up to someone creatively, to, you know, be vulnerable and share an idea. I mean, like, you know, to some level, it's like those ideas, just like we were talking about earlier, those are our treasures. Those are our gold within us that we hold. And it's like, you know, if you are, you know, half-heartedly sharing an idea with someone that you don't even know like 2 cents about, then like you run the risk of seeing that idea being taken in another form that you did not intend. And, you know, without that trust, it just kind of can disappear or however fade away. But yeah, no, I really respect that. And I appreciate you saying that too, where it's like, we got to be careful with who we let in to be able to support us, as much as, you know, people are going to be careful and selective about inviting us to their project too. So it's a very reciprocal, you know, form of trust exchange, I guess, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, look, everything under the sun is relative. You know, I'm sure what I think about or what I try to show, someone else has done, or maybe we'll try to do, or have, who, you know, somehow or another, somebody has thought about it. But what's important is that when you're really working, the trust comes from trusting yourself first, right? Being committed, you know, knowing that you're going to pull through, knowing that if somehow or another something happens, you know how to just complete a project. So for me, it's, I don't know if it's just one thing about me that I'm very concerned about, but when I start something, I want to finish it. You know, it's very important to me that I do things correctly. I think with projects, you also want to look at people's track record. Just because they're a great person doesn't mean that they're a great filmmaker. Just because they're your friend doesn't mean that they're not going to disappoint you. And so you have to balance all of those things in filmmaking, because, you know, I mean, it's so easy to go berserk. You know, I've seen a lot of directors do it. I've seen the tantrums. I've been a part of things where I've seen directors, you know, throw huge tantrums. And here's something to grow on. I threw tantrums behind closed doors with producers and people, right?
I'm surprised by this. I'm
an exclusive.
Right.
And, you know, but then, you know, we get past it. But it's one of those things where you can't take it back, right? Like when you get upset with someone, or I've been on the other end where somebody would get, you know, maybe they were a little bit more disrespectful towards me, especially as a first-time director. You know, I've seen that. I've seen people question what I do. And I was like, excuse me, you know, where you shut things down. And, you know, you have to remind people, and this is very important for directors, as long as you come in prepared. That is like the one thing. You are leading a crew. You have to be on the up. You have to kind of drive this creative force through this content, right? Whatever it may be, you have to have the energy. You have to have, I keep saying preparation. Preparation is so key, but also a good attitude is important. So whether I'm an actress coming on set, I'm saying hello to everyone, even if you don't want to say hello to me. If I'm a director, I'm being very respectful to everyone, to the crew. You know, I protect my crew. But those are the things that are so essential in a production. Because if you don't have that, and if you don't have, you know, someone that believes in you, and I think I've seen this especially with women, first-time directors, you know, I would see a DP jump in and try to do their job. I would see an actor kind of come in and try to manipulate them into doing something that they know they don't want to do. You know, now whether or not, like, you know, you have to have the confidence. You have to have a very clear vision. And sometimes your vision isn't clear. Sometimes your AD is going to pick up on something. You're going to probably sometimes, there was only one time, I think, out of 22 days in Freestyle Music, The Legacy, I saw a setup and I was like, this is where the setup needs to be, you know, for something. And then I looked at it through the lens. I was like, wait, let's stop the work. This isn't it. And then, you know, I wanted to give myself 20 lashes. But I mean, like one time, you know, out of 22 shoots, those things happen. But what do? I prepare, right? Doing something, and then we're lighting something else. We're focusing on these things. You have to have a plan, even if it's an evacuation plan.
Well, it's so funny you say that because yesterday, Emerald Fennell, who directed Promising Young Woman and just came out with Saltburn, came to Columbia and she had a screening of Saltburn and a Q&A afterwards. And it was great listening to her and super inspiring. But one of the things she talked about was that something that as a female director that you're constantly up against are the are you sures. And what she means by that is that when you're a female director, people are constantly going to ask you, are you sure? So she says like the best way to combat that is to have 10 reasons for every decision that you make. So that way, like if somebody wants to say to you, are you sure? She has 10 reasons that she's absolutely sure, which is why like on her sets, she bans the are you sure questions because she is sure and she doesn't have the time to make her crew waste, you know, or the actors waste any time to make her project the best it can be. Seems like she's doing pretty well at it. I don't know. The movie was pretty good. So
that's a very good point because also it will come from your own team sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, you have to really make sure that they stay in their lane. And usually, sadly, it comes from a lot of people who are pretty junior in the industry. They'll say why, or they'll make a decision, or they think they're making a decision for you and speaking for you, which is a big mistake. And then on set, you know, I can be like the most calm person. And then somebody will try to see something from a different perspective. And I'm like, wait a minute, I know my setups. I know exactly what I have to do. And so what I usually do is I say, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. But I've already made this decision. And sometimes you have to do that because I try to take it from a place of kindness, but I never let anyone interfere with my directing. And if somebody was smart enough, they would know that you don't overstep that boundary ever, ever, ever. You know, you never go and question your director, especially in production. That's what pre-production is for. So that might be my second why. Maybe pre-production. We went over this. Or you weren't in pre-production, but thank you very much. I appreciate that. Even that's my nice way of saying don't you dare. Because
don't dare do that.
No, because and it's not about ego. You know, it's about, again, we're going back to trust, right? Like they know what they're doing. Your director knows what he, she, or they're doing. It's really simple. It's nothing more than that. But that's unfortunate. But I do get challenged a lot as a woman. And like I said, for first time women directors, you know, it's very important, I think. And if this is anything that directors are learning now, is to have a really great DP.
Yes.
And if you've never directed a film before, know your lenses, because what it really comes down to is that we're telling a story through a lens, right? And you have the action in front of you. And so you have to put the camera where the story is. You have to put those lenses that are going to capture those moments. You know, hopefully you'll get a brilliant editor and you'll know those scenes, but you have to know how you get enough coverage and you have to plan enough time for it. So if you have a really great DP and you don't know lenses, well, that's how you get through it. You surround yourself with an experienced crew. Because I love seeing women tell stories. There's something very special about women telling stories for the first time, the things they discover. I have a really good friend named Jimmy Gadd who makes incredible films. He comes from the studio system. You know, he's worked on a lot of studio films. And I said to him, I was like, you know, Jimmy, your shorts are so beautiful. And he's like, you know, I had to make 10 shorts to get here. So can you imagine as a filmmaker what that's like to get the money, to get the funding, to get the right equipment, to tell the story? You know, it's funny, HBO has this, what is it? It's a contest for the AAPI month, and it's for Asian Pacific Islander filmmakers. And I remember one year, they always change up the rules, you know. So one time, one year it was 15 minutes, and then one year it was 12. It went down to 12 minutes, and one of my films, Kicks, I actually made. It was like really like more like a 15-minute film. And I remember I had to cut it down so much. I had to cut it down because it was 12 minutes. And I'm like, can I make this film breathe? Can I give it a moment? Let it expand, you know? And although I wasn't one of the top three, you know, the film got distribution immediately and it was on airplanes. And I was so happy about that. And again, you know, that's why, back to the advice, always make the film truthful. If it doesn't fit the platform, then just don't try to put, you know, a size 8 foot in a size 6 shoe. It just, you know, just keep the work legitimate. The laurels will come, and then you don't rest on them. You still continue to make the work, you know, but I just remember doing that. And I said, why did I do that? You know, why didn't I take 15 minutes and condense it to 12? Because I just, again, I thought it was the greatest platform. It was about Amerasian characters, you know, and they stand online at night to get the latest sneaker. And then this racial conversation ensues about being Amerasian in America. And that's what it was really about, you know. And so it needed time to kind of breathe. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
So, you learn those lessons, you know, with your narrative films. You want to tell that story, you know. So anyway, I recut it. And I kept it back. I cut it down to 12 minutes for HBO. They said no, but I moved on, and you know, it did get distribution. So I'm so happy about that. So a lot of people got to see it, and you know, I got some good feedback from it, like great feedback. I feel like it was one of those films that I felt like a lot of people really appreciated, who could relate to, you know, identifying in America, you know, culturally. And but anyway. Yeah, it's a good.
Okay, not, Maria.
No, goodness, keep going. No, no, no.
Yeah.
No,
anyway, I know.
Even from the sound of your voice, it's just like, oh, I could listen to you for days. I swear.
Yeah.
That's gonna be my next thing, right? We're gonna be doing stories. Like, I'll do lullabies. No, but
right. You know, get you a, let's get you on audiobooks and everywhere. Oh my goodness.
I know, but before we get on to audiobooks, I think we got to ask her the regular questions. Sure. What do you think, Alejandro?
Yes. Okay. So let's get into it. Something we love learning from each guest is, you know, you've spoken so much about how multifaceted your career is, and you are super, super disciplined and able to handle so much in a day. But I'm curious, at the top of each day, what do you do as like your morning routine, or what are your like either healthy habits or routines that just you have to do?
So I get up, my alarm goes off, and I give myself another 10 minutes.
I love that.
It's a mess in the morning. Ooh, what do I do in the morning? I can't even lie to you. The only good thing that I do in the morning is I'm disciplined to just drink a glass of water before I start my day. And I think what happens is that I only eat between 12 and 8. So that gives my digestive system a break. I'm a Diet Coke, popcorn, and gummy bear junkie. So it's...
Yes, no, I love a good Diet Coke. Once I start with Diet Coke, it's hard for me to stop. It's
Diet Coke. I don't know what it is. It's like a cold Diet Coke on set or anywhere at any time. I'm in.
Oh, my God.
It's different on set. It's different on set. For some reason, it hits different.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, and I said this recently in something that I'm involved in, like, I really wish I had, you see, this is the thing. We can't really neglect ourselves. There's something about being in this industry. You know, some people have very stressful jobs, you know, people that are on the front lines, people that have to use their mind all day, people that have to use their hands, people that have to use energy. But one thing about us is we always have to be ready for set. And production, they're long hours, no matter what you say, whether you have to carry your body or you have to carry a dolly, like whatever it is, we have to be really disciplined and ready to just kind of like be able to endure the day. Or the 40 days, or the 50 days, whatever it is. So depending on what I do, truthfully, if it wasn't for acting, I probably would be like so overweight because I love food. But I also, I know I can't be because then I'm not gonna work in my industry the way I need to be working, right, to that capacity. So I think the first thing I do is I get up in the morning and I drink water. I try to get as much fresh air as I can. That is so important to me, just taking deep breaths and having fresh air. What I would like to do, and I've been saying this, so maybe this is something I need to put on the schedule for a discipline, is really just get on the nutrition, you know, like really start eating in a way where I'm not just eating once a day and that's it, or I'm just eating between a time, but like really just balancing my diet with proper things. Like, you know, not saying that I don't, but like I don't eat anything in boxes. I don't eat anything with sodium. I'm not a big sugar junkie except for gummy bears, but we have to find that thing that where, you know, we do go to our doctor. Like, that's why it's so important. You know, when we talk about the strike, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how many people can really afford right now to pay their dues. I don't know how that's going to affect people with their, you know, their health care, their pension plans. You know, this is such a serious and delicate time for artists, you know, for writers. I mean, the way it's affecting us, it really has a very, very heavy effect on our mental health, on the day-to-day, the anxiety, especially for people who just do this. I think of our background performers who are constantly being taken advantage of, you know. And when you think about how do we forgive, you know, Iger for what he said, like, you know, we're going to just like, you know, eventually crumble and we're going to go back to work. You know, how do we manage all of that when you feel like we give so much and we're getting... like right now, nothing, because there is nothing for us, right? So health-wise, I think mental health is so important. You know, I try to approach it with humor. Otherwise, it could get very dark for me, you know? I also think that just doing what you can is important. So I wish I could say something like, yeah, you know, I run 5 miles a day. I don't.
No, honesty is much better. So speaking of honesty, yes, because we are damsels in the DMs, we do like to ask, what is the funniest, wildest, most intriguing, or inspirational DM that you've ever received?
Inspirational. So
we'll take what we can get.
So inspirational. So you just never really know how you're going to touch people, right? And I know for many years, I would wind up in someone's DMs and I would say, thank you. Or that was so courageous of you. Or, oh my gosh, I adore you. Like, thank you for speaking out, or thank you for inspiring me, or whatever it might be. So I entered this contest called Fab Over 40. And so it's really funny because I would get people that knew me, or they would say certain things and I'd be, oh, it's a really nice DM, you know. But the women that are writing that, you know, that actually take the time to read the bio, and the women that actually, so like, it's so nice. Like, they're like, they'll say like the most amazing things and say like, how do you balance it all? Or thank you. You know, you said something about X, Y, and Z, and it really affected me in such a positive way. Oh, I learned more about you. And there was something that came up online where I said, you know, like it's social media, you'll see the best side of me. But if you really want to see the side of me, you may not want to look at it. I said that one time because it's true, you know. But I think what I recently had a young woman that wrote me, and she had a daughter, and she was saying that her daughter wanted to be a filmmaker, and that she saw a picture of me behind a camera, and she was like, mommy, look, you know, look at this director. She's wearing a blazer. She's also like fashionable and so on and so forth. And then we wound up getting into this beautiful dialogue over Instagram, and her daughter wants to become a director. She currently writes stories. So eventually we got on the phone. I know, it was like so sweet. And she was like, I was like, so I heard you like to tell stories. And she said, yes. And, you know, she was actually from South America. And I said, do you know how amazing it is that like so many cultures, part of our traditions are oral traditions? And we started talking about telling stories. And I said, did you ever act out your story? And I see, you know, I see a picture of her in a costume, like in this beautiful little costume. And I was just like, It is amazing. You know, like, I mean, who would think that anyone would dare to be a woman director? You know, who would think that women actresses had a voice anymore? You know, we could be poets, we could be mothers, we could be so many things, we could be nurses. They see us that way. But now it's like directors, producers, you know, entrepreneurs, it's creators, you know. And so I've been getting a lot of these really beautiful messages, and from, and especially like the mothers and their little girls. There's a special friend of mine, her daughter, I recently connected with, and she said that she really likes makeup and acting, and like she'll take pictures and she'll send them to me. And I just feel like that's so sweet, you know, like they could be doing anything else, but they're actually coming and saying that really just a couple of lines mm-hmm. that I wrote in my bio was inspiring to them. And so, you know, it's a nice thing, you know, instead of all this nonsense in social media that goes on. It really just depends on what you're looking at. Like, I'm
so true.
You know, I'm very focused on Film Fatales. You know, that's an organization for women directors, and I see what everyone's doing and I applaud it, and I applaud the young women, you know, even mm-hmm. that are coming up too, because that's so important. And then, you know, New York Women in Film and Television, Alliance of Women Directors. I mean, you want to be present in that community and you want to support everyone. You know, it's not just about when we have something out, you know, it's about us like building a whole entire community, and that a community that takes action, you know? But those mm-hmm. are the most inspirational DMs was that recent one with, and I just thought about oral traditions and storytelling, and I think she'll be a great filmmaker in the making.
Definitely.
That's so beautiful. And I just want to hold the mirror up to you and remind you of what you spoke about earlier, where, you know, you were saying, you commented just a moment ago about how, like, you know, you were surprised by, like, a few lines of your bio was so inspiring. But also, you were speaking about diverse representation and how mm-hmm. representation matters. And the fact that, like, that image of you mm-hmm. doing what you love doing inspired this young person to,
yeah.
or to pattern herself in a similar vein.
Yeah.
How amazing and admirable, and like that is just so incredible to hear. And I'm
that's actually such a perfect lead in to what our DM of the week would like to know, which is that, Alejandro, would you like to do the honors or should I?
Well go ahead take it away, you're already on the roll.
Well, no, just everything that we're talking about I think aligns perfectly with what they're asking, and what they're asking is, what's the goal that you're trying to achieve in your career? What fulfills you? And I think that's such a big question. You know, you've had films in Cannes, you've had films in Venice. A lot of people would just be like, okay, call it a day now. I've reached the pinnacle of success. So what's more to there? What more can you do?
I always believe just don't rest on your laurels. Just continue to work in an industry that you love, that you're committed to, that you're devoted to, and just tell great stories. You know, I think if you have a great project, it will find the right fit. You know, have a business sense of mind. So my goals is just to continue being a part of great films as an actor, just also just being, making great films, telling great stories. I want to inspire people. I want to do work that really inspires people. It's really that simple. I mean, that's the goal, is just to keep working in the industry and keep creating.
Yes.
Absolutely. You've inspired me. Oh my goodness.
Oh, this conversation is
a gift.
Thank
you. Oh my goodness. But for our listeners, please tell us, and for me too, how can we stay updated on all of your work, all of your projects? I mean, I know you said you have mariasecor.com, but is there more than one website that we need to be following?
Yes. And where can we vote for you for the Fab Over 40?
Yes.
Please.
This is very important, and I'll tell you why. So I was nominated to be in this contest called Fab Over 40. So the winner gets this really great prize. She gets a 2-page spread in New Beauty Magazine. But most importantly, so people can vote via Facebook, and that's a free vote. But also, if you decide to donate, it's tax-free, and everything goes to the National Breast Cancer Foundation. And that's so important, because, and I just know this because I've had people in my family that suffered from this, and I have some friends going through it, but 1 in 8 women in their lifetime will get breast cancer. So when you think about it, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of new things that are occurring now when, you know, when women get breast cancer, or just even for breast exams, mammograms, sonograms, like now they're actually doing sonograms. And I think that's just so important. And to also get the test, you know, if you're Ashkenazi, you should take that, you should get a BRCA test. And some women just have it in their family. It's just inevitable. A lot of people should look at Angelina Jolie's story. It's very, very profound. I mean, it was like generations of breast cancer. And the way she actually handled it was very inspirational. She did something about it because she just knew that she would probably be 9 times out of 10 a candidate of breast cancer. You know, so the contest is great. You know, there's women from all over that have entered it. You have to be over 40, which I am. And, you know, so there's like all these little different type of segments of voting. But mainly if you just vote via Facebook, you just vote. And that's one vote for me. So it's always great. And I can give you the link and share it with you. And I haven't done my website yet because of the fact that it's sort of like pending, because I'm trying to figure out how to structure it. You know, I'm like they have these three slots like this. So,
yeah. But what's your Instagram where people can find the link to vote for you?
Oh, sure. My Instagram is I am Maria Secor. I am Maria Secor.
Yay. Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
We want to vote from our podcast, or from our Instagram page as well. We'll definitely.
Yes. Thank you so much for being here. It was such a joy to hear your story.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for having me. And I wish you guys every great thing. And I'm going to be following you. I already followed you guys, and I'm going to follow you.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
It has been such an amazing day, an amazing episode. But to keep it coming, please send us your voicemails, send us your DMs, send us your emails, send us any notes or reviews that you might want to send us so that we can keep giving you the takeaways, the advice, the expertise that you want to gain in order to continue blossoming in your respective careers. And we have a wide range of guests, as you've already seen, so nothing is off limits.
Yes, let us know who you want to hear from and what you want to hear from them. And please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it. Until next time.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Damsels in the DMs.
Until next time.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye. Bye.
DMs, yeah, we see them, yeah, we read them. DMs, DMs, we don't need them, we just leave them.
Please.
Yeah.
It's going down in the DMs. Bye.